You're listening to the Let's Talk Future podcast series presented by Oppenheimer. If you're interested in the economy, the markets, and investing in general, you've come to the right place. This series was created to fascinate and enlighten every type of investor. Curious about the latest consumer trends? How about innovations in healthcare or technology? The Let's Talk Future series definitely has you covered. Through timely and relevant conversations, we deliver some of the best thought leadership in the financial services industry. Our renowned hosts and guests explore big questions and big ideas and leave you with actionable insights. In this episode, our guest is Kristin Steffens, Managing Director of Public Finance at Oppenheimer. And our host is Jane Ross, Managing Director and Editor-in-Chief of the Let's Talk Future podcast series. This episode was recorded on March 5th, 2024. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode on Talking Public Finance. I'm your host, Jane Ross, and we're here to tackle some of the big themes in public finance in 2024 and beyond, because it sure has been an eventy time. Municipal bonds had a roller coaster of a year in 2023, ultimately ending up 6.6%, but after a lot of volatility. Then Citigroup and UBS both announced their exit from the municipal bond underwriting and trading business, and they were both big players in that space. So Oppenheimer, always on the lookout for fantastic opportunities, has now grown our public finance leadership and teams by hiring some of these talented individuals. And one of those super talented individuals is our guest today, Kristin Steffens, Managing Director and Head of the Northeast Region in Public Finance at Oppenheimer. Kristin has over 20 years' experience in developing innovative credit strategies for our communities and the people who live in them. I'm eager for listeners and investors to hear her thoughts about possible inflections in credit quality in the years ahead. So, Kristin, with all of that, welcome to Oppenheimer and welcome to the Let's Talk Future podcast.
Thank you so much, Jane. It's a pleasure to be here and to be at the firm.
Great. Well, let's get started. And maybe you could position us at the macro level. It's been a crazy few years. What's the credit climate like now in U.S. public finance?
Great question, Jane. You know, it's been extremely constructive, and we're very grateful for that. But if I look at S&P's data as a proxy here, they've reported 1,190 upgrades in 2023 to only 268 downgrades. So that gives you an upgrade to downgrade ratio of almost 4.5 to 1, which is a big number. During that year, 5 states were upgraded. So we now have a total number of AAA rated states of 16 by S&P alone. So across the sector and the space, credit quality is really up all across the board with one exception. And I would say the healthcare sector pretty much there, and to a lesser degree, higher education. But notably, these 2023 results that you're seeing here build upon an already strong 2022. In that year, you had an upgrade to downgrade ratio of 3.25 to 1. And if we just look at Moody's as another reference point, the data is really going to be the same. There you have upgrades exceeding downgrades last year by a margin of 716 to 199. So that's about 3.6 to 1. And that marks the third year in a row of that pattern. You know, looking past certain sector specific challenges, as I mentioned, healthcare, higher ed being the two, the climate really has been quite strong. In my opinion, it would be highly unusual for this pattern to continue at these levels. What I'm expecting to see in here is more of a reversion to historic patterns going forward.
Okay, that makes sense. And so let's spend a second. When we talk about the health of public finance, we're talking about really state and local governments and tax revenues. That too has been a wild ride. We went through COVID, and then we went through major trillions of dollars of federal stimulus going out to our states and local governments. And then we've seen a bunch of tax cuts. You know, where are we and where do we go from here?
Well, Jane, as you've described, state tax revenues have become increasingly volatile in recent years. But certainly, if we think about just the past few years, they very much have been unusual times. And now we're finally appearing to be entering that period of greater normalization that I was referencing. So if you let me explain for a moment, what we saw happen was that the immediate budget shortfalls that were driven by the pandemic, those were quickly mitigated by a number of temporary positive factors that supported revenues. Of course, we had substantial federal relief. Plus, quite frankly, we had an exceptionally strong stock market. And, you know, while this might seem counterintuitive, elevated inflation is actually to the benefit of sales tax collections because, you know, you have increased spending on these taxable goods. So what this led to was really surging revenue growth at both the state and local level in both fiscal years 2021 and 2022. That also helped to facilitate the growth of record reserve balances for those entities. But, you know, to your point, it also then subsequently spurred a proliferation of tax cuts and other measures. So you take those into account, coupled with weaker financial markets, and what we're seeing is a reversal of that revenue growth trend in fiscal year 2023 and into the first half of fiscal year 2024.
Gotcha. Okay. So you talked about tax cuts. And when we talk about state and local revenues, what are the sources of all of that?
Sure. So the four primary sources are the personal income tax, the corporate income tax, the sales tax, and then at the local level, the property tax. So when we take those as a whole, your major state tax revenues increased significantly during the pandemic, but then they declined dramatically in the first three quarters of 2023. And your major local revenue sources, you know, property tax, that tended to behave more measurably by comparison. And none of that is surprising if you look at kind of the historic patterns of these revenue sources. So the first two, the personal income tax and the corporate income tax, those tend to be more cyclical. They tend to be affected by broader financial market performance. And, you know, state and local governments have had decades to figure out how to deal with that volatility. You know, over the years, many have set up mechanisms to normalize the volatility. Quite frankly, you'll see certain state and locals directing excess collections in the good years to their rainy day funds, sometimes according to a formula that then becomes available when times aren't so rosy. So that's how you start seeing entities address with that. Now, the sales tax, you know, as I mentioned, it generally benefits from high inflation. It certainly did during the pandemic. And some weakening did set in there in 2023. That reflected both changing macroeconomic conditions, but also changing spending patterns. And, you know, I'm sure we were all in the place spending more on goods during the pandemic, whether it have been it was setting up a home office or other home improvements. And now there's obviously this pent up demand for services again. People are getting out there and traveling and all that. So you're seeing these spending patterns go back to pre-pandemic norms as well. And then finally, with the property tax, I think this one is an interesting story as well. You know, it's known as the most stable revenue stream in public finance because it typically responds relatively slowly to changes in property values. And that's because of assessment practices that smooth out valuation changes over longer periods of time. Even so, in this cycle, declining commercial real estate valuations and emerging pressure now on the residential segment with higher mortgage rates, that captures attention and it does present some greater forecasting risk for some local governments.
Okay, so that's a lot. So you've set the table of where we're getting the revenues from. The overall climate looks pretty good. Let's talk a little bit about one of the points you talked about. You know, you've referenced it, some of the concerns with our legacy tax code not kind of fitting the world that we're in. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, sure. I'd be happy to do so. So that's really when we think about it, I think, as the sales tax is the big example of that. If you take that shift that I mentioned, whereby we see more spending on services than goods in today's economy, That really reflects, if we pause to think about it, a paradigm that simply wasn't in place when these tax systems were constructed. And that was back in the 30s. Now, services today currently represent about 2/3 of state personal consumption expenditures, and it was less than half in the 1960s. So a lot has changed. The big picture here is that although some states have, in fact, expanded their sales tax base to include services, many services are still not subject to state sales tax. And some states, they don't tax services at all. So when you're in that backdrop, and it's important to understand the revenue mix of each jurisdiction, right? Because it does make it difficult to properly capture economic activity from a tax policy standpoint. And the extent to which, and this is just one example, but the extent to which services are taxed is going to be meaningful. And when we think looking forward, how might governments modernize their tax codes to respond to just today's economy to position for success in the years ahead?
Right. I mean, that's what we're talking about here for investors to be aware of. What are the big hot topics? And taxing services is certainly one. Another one that comes up all the time, and it's been the source of some of our podcasts, relates to property taxes and the current state of that. Can you spend a couple seconds there?
Sure. I think that's important to spend some time on, because there is this dichotomy, if you will, right now between the commercial and residential side. And how does that play into the property tax? I think it's top of mind for a lot of investors. So probably digging a bit deeper here makes sense. But so big picture, I would say it's really been well documented now that the shift to remote and hybrid work, plus the downsizing of the tech sector employment, and in some cities, the oversupply of commercial space has increased pressure on the commercial segment. But the question is, how much risk in public finance does that really present to overall property taxes? And I think it's really interesting because you have now banks estimating that we'll have a record $1.5 trillion of U.S. commercial property loans coming due by the end of 2025. So there's that. But the fact of the matter, in my opinion here, this is likely to have a much greater impact on the banking sector than on local government property tax revenues. And that's because of the lags I mentioned that are built into the assessment process. There's other factors at play too, but as investors, we have to think about what are the questions we should be asking. And if I put that hat on, my first would be, how much does a local government rely on the property tax in the first place? You know, sometimes it's a relatively small piece of the overall mix. And secondly, then I'd want to know how much of that is actually represented by the commercial segment. Once we've gotten to that, you know, how is the residential side performing at the same time? Is it going to balance some of this out? And then going back to the bigger picture, how does the assessment process work? And by that, I mean, over what period of time are changes in assessed value phased in? We've seen, you know, when you have a longer period, that's going to temper the impact of the decline. But also, when are the property tax levy and the tax rate set? Because you do have some jurisdictions where if these are set after the market value of a property is determined, you know, they can increase the rate to collect the full targeted amount of the levy. So taken collectively here, and I know I got into the weeds a bit there, if you take all that together, what often becomes evident is that declines in commercial property tax revenue often turn out to represent only a nominal percentage of total property tax revenues for a local government. And then they represent an even smaller percentage of total governmental revenues. So, you know, of course, commercial office revaluations are going to matter here. It certainly affects the overall fiscal condition of different cities differently, but the overall impact, I would think, is going to be manageable here for the nation's largest cities.
Which I'm really glad you went into the weeds, because it's important to know, because it seems like very big numbers, but when you put it in the context, which you just did, that makes sense. And that leads us to another theme that I think is important here going forward, which is the future of our cities. You know, there's been a lot of press on the blight in downtown areas and what COVID hath wrought in terms of all of that. And what are your thoughts there?
Oh, sure. Well, you know, this is one of my favorite questions and one of my favorite areas of studies, because I've long said the future of cities is bright. And there's just so much research coming out on this topic day to day. It's a wonderful time to be following this space. Frankly, Moody's published a report that I thought was interesting. It was a report on the CMBS sector, and it actually echoes what we in public finance have known for some time, that cities use periods of dislocation like this as an opportunity to reinvent, to reimagine, and to rebuild. But if we look at Moody's report, it focuses on how growing housing affordability challenges, plus this desire to revitalize downtowns, how is this driving policy to encourage the conversion of vacant offices to residential use? Which we know there can be challenges to that, right? But there are a number of jurisdictions that have launched some pretty substantial office to residential conversion initiatives in recent years. And many of these are really new. I mean, they were just proposed or approved in 2023. But, and it really ranges the gamut here. At the federal level, you have the Housing Supply Action Plan, but there are separate efforts underway in California and New York at the state level, as well as in the District of Columbia and in the cities. Really many cities, but to name a few, Atlanta, Boston, Chicago, Denver, Houston, New York, Pittsburgh, San Francisco, and Seattle, they're all pursuing initiatives here. And, you know, whether it be changing zoning rules or providing property tax abatements or other conversion tax incentives, there are all sorts of different financing tools and grant programs being explored across the country to address this challenge and to transform downtowns into 24/7, as I like to call them, live, work, play destinations, which, you know, many people, I'm one of them, think this will be better than what it was before. And you know, I'll throw another data point in here just for the sake of conversation, and I'll borrow from Brookings on this, but they did a really interesting study on city population shifts post-pandemic, and that was published just last June. But what they did was analyze the latest Census Bureau data, and they found that more than half of the nation's largest 88 cities lost population from July 2020 through July 2021, which I'm sure you'll say, well, that's not surprising, but it was a historic population loss, and to an extent that really hadn't happened in decades. And it really wasn't just the exodus from the pandemic that drove this, but also you had less immigration from abroad, you had the COVID-related deaths, and even fertility rate downturns. They then looked at the most recent available data, which was for the next year, so July 2021 to July 2022. We're still impacted by the pandemic at that point, so let's keep that in mind. But even then, most of the group had recovered quite a bit. You saw lower population losses or a switch to population gains or even greater gains. And the point is here that cities were already showing signs of recovery. And if you looked at where the greatest reversals were occurring, it was in the biggest cities. Some of that reflected the fact that international migration picked up again. We had near tripling of the rate from the prior year. We also had the shifts back in terms of domestic migration. But in any case, I thought that was interesting and kind of another reason for optimism here.
Well, it is interesting. And I think this whole topic of reimagining our cities is a great one. I see a podcast episode in our future to talk about that.
I'd love that.
let's stay on cities and important themes for our listeners. Another theme that we keep hearing about is illegal immigration and the stress that that puts on our urban centers. Is that something that you worry about?
Well, it certainly is a topic that comes up with increased frequency that, you know, we haven't been focused on previously, and I'd love to speak a little bit about it today. It definitely is a greater part of the credit conversation, particularly for the more affected urban centers. And yes, it does present an area of rising costs for some issuers, but in my opinion, it's not one that presents undue credit risk. And, you know, you'll read about the large sums of money that are tied to this expense, but it is important to put that dollar amount into context on a percentage of budget basis. You also want to understand not only what is it as a percentage of budget, and generally it's a pretty manageable number, but also how does it fit within the context of these communities' overall liquidity position? They're, you know, in many cases, when we started the conversation, we talked about these very large reserves that were out there as well. I also think it's important to just bear in mind that the funding discussion for this is still evolving. Some of the share is likely to be offset by still to be determined state and federal contributions. And then, you know, there's always two sides to the story, right? So longer term, perhaps you have a possible benefit as well presented by the population influx of younger worker age individuals, particularly if it's in an area where population was otherwise contracted. So I think that's all important. And I think we've seen time and time again how resilient state and local governments can be in managing their fiscal well-being. And I would not expect this to be any different. But it's how do they manage that challenge? That's what affects credit ratings and spreads.
Right. To be determined. Okay. Another theme is infrastructure as we look at the health of our communities. And one of those issues that I'm certainly familiar with living in Los Angeles is the issue of water. And that's an issue, infrastructure, water, the resources to support our communities. You have to spend time there as well.
Certainly. And you know, as background, I'm a longtime credit analyst. So for years, decades, really, I've been kind of tracking what comes up in terms of credit issues for our communities. And this whole notion of water supply, which has been a concern for years and years, it now is indeed taking on more credence in credit analysis than I've seen in the past. I would say, too, that it's a national issue, right? Groundwater loss is a factor that the whole country needs to be considering. Over a third of America's total drinking water comes from this source. And it impacts different communities differently too. But as an example, in Arizona, you know, some officials have recently limited new residential construction in the Phoenix area, a community there, because there was concerns about the lack of a proven 100-year water supply. And, you know, there are other communities where you can point to where similar conversations are taking place. But if we think about the breadbasket states, it becomes a limitation for industrial scale agriculture. When we look at coastal areas, overpumping can accelerate saltwater intrusion. So these are all issues to consider. And you'll note, I didn't even touch on some of the other big considerations, be it extreme drought in the West Coast or the whole water rights and allocation decisions that are underway presently in the Colorado River Basin. So all of these are really important considerations and gaining a lot more focus than I've seen in the past.
Yeah, these are all topics that, again, are suitable for individual episodes to talk about. So, you know, we've covered a lot here. And on Let's Talk Future, we like to talk about the future. So why don't you close in giving us your thoughts as you look ahead? How would you assess the road ahead?
The road ahead, the loaded question, right? My takeaway would be this, you know, issuers in public finance, they are certainly affected by the same trends that impact the broader economy, but there also are very significant and important nuances that tend to create a degree of cushion that may not exist in other segments. And, you know, our conversation on commercial real estate, hopefully that sparked an example of just that situation. But I'd say that credit quality on balance remains strong, but it is normalizing, which in this case implies a retracing to more balanced rating activity instead of the strongly positive activity we've seen over the past several years. Looking forward, I think things may become a bit trickier for state and local governments to navigate, and careful budgeting is going to be essential, particularly for those that enacted permanent tax cuts. We'll need to see the ability to manage increased costs. We'll need to see the ability to address the runoff of stimulus dollars. And again, these tax policy changes that occurred, those are among the issues to watch. I think they can pressure operating and capital budgets if not properly managed, but these will be the topics of fiscal year 2025 budget negotiations that our state and local governments will work through. And, you know, Jane, what we didn't get much into here today is the macro climate and the technical performance of the muni market, but you know, it does go without saying that at a high level, we're operating within a particularly fraught year. There are many variables that could introduce volatility, be it the election, you know, the ongoing debates around a government spending package, federal deficit, upcoming tax reform, the forthcoming Fed rate decisions. There's the regulatory framework and so much more. So we certainly are faced with the possibility, or dare I say, the likelihood of continued uncertainty. So against that kind of backdrop, our focus is on credit quality. I believe that understanding the fundamentals is so very important. And it's not only important as a window into the health of our communities, but also into the health of U.S. public finance itself.
Well, there you have it. Well, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time, Kristen. Really welcome to our enterprise, and I look forward to doing this again soon.
Likewise, and thank you so much for having me today.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Let's Talk Future. We know your podcast listening options are endless, and so we're glad you're spending time with us. Don't miss out on our next episode, and remember to subscribe today. Join our community to expand your thoughts on business, the markets, and the dynamic forces affecting them. It's time to talk future.